Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. A new Washington Post Ipsos poll found President Donald Trump's approval rating has dipped to 37%, the lowest of this presidential term. That's paired with a 62% disapproval rating, a record high over both presidential terms. So, what's driving the numbers? 3/4 of Americans said they disapproved of how Trump is handling the cost of living in the U.S., with just about 1/4 approving. Nearly as many disapprove of how he's handling inflation, 72%. For what his approval rating means for the midterms, a lasting ceasefire in Iran, gas prices, and many more issues, we turn to WWL in New Orleans and Ian Hawk.
The conflict in the Middle East is adding a major foreign policy test with big consequences for energy prices, inflation, the economy, and the 2026 midterms. Found more than 60% of Americans disapprove of the way President Trump is handling the Iran situation. Here to help us understand that is Aaron Dusso, who's an associate professor of poli-sci at Indiana University in Indianapolis. What's the headline number in this poll that really jumped out to you first?
Well, I mean, to see that support for a war that's not really that old is so low. You're talking, 30%, range. That is shocking because historically, Americans will rally around the flag when it comes to foreign conflicts like this. And we never really saw that because we didn't really see support for the war above, 50%, even in the beginning. And so that's a problem for an administration that continues to see its approval in all kinds of different areas go down. And then $4+ gas is going to, cost everything to be a big problem for Trump.
Good. Yeah, I guess that kind of gets to my next question. It's interesting to consider how, the war is like you said, is very young. It's in the crib. It's unusual for Americans to feel so passionately disapproving of something that's really so fresh. What do you think they're reacting to most? Is it the messaging? Is it the effect on energy prices or something else?
Well, I think it starts with that there was no real ramp up to the war. So the Trump administration didn't spend the time, usually a good 6 months to a year building their case for the war. So if you think about the Bush administration going into Iraq, they spent almost a year where they were just pounding the pavement, making their argument on every news channel at the UN over and over again about why this needs to happen. And so they're rallying support. And that didn't really happen with the Iran war that we're seeing right now. It's just although it was almost sprung on us that all of a sudden we're in this war and expecting everyone to fall in line. And so it's never gotten better since then, because typically the start of a war is where you're going to have the highest approval ratings for it, and it never gets better than that. And so you're just the downward trend that we've seen consistently over the last couple of months.
I'm glad you kind of broadened the conversation out right away to the president's other polling issues. How much of this polling is about Iran specifically, and how much of it is just a broader sense that the country is headed in the wrong direction under President Trump's leadership right now?
I mean, I think it's, when any type of foreign kind of conflict, it's more about what's happening at home than it is abroad. And when it comes to gas prices, it's the most, kind of personal price, a piece of the economy that people feel every single day. And that's something you can't avoid. And so when we had gas prices go over 4 and now they're starting to push towards 5, that is going to affect people in their pocketbook every day. And you can't get away from that. And so it's really the Iran war's effect and the, closing of the Straits of Hormuz effect on gas prices, I think, that's driving this, this real decline in support for anything that's happening in Iraq right now.
Professor, foreign policy issues in general, I feel in my experience here talking to people on the radio, feels distant to a lot of voters a lot of the time. In your estimation, why is this issue becoming more politically important at this moment?
Well, I mean, because, again, as we were saying, it becomes important because it has, all these, other effects, particularly the economy is always the number one issue. Inflation stays high. If you're polling right now, inflation as part of the economy is, the top of people's minds. And when you can't get a handle on the economy, you can't get a handle on inflation, it's going to eat up your administration. And Biden saw this effect, in 2024, ultimately affects Harris when she's, the candidate, but they couldn't get past that. It ate up the administration inflation, and it's going to eat up the Trump administration, because what political science research shows right now is that people's opinions of the president and the party of the president start to solidify over these next few months. And so if you're going to make a change, if you're going to see a change in your prospects for the election coming up, it's got to happen now. You can't wait anymore. It's got to happen now.
Mm-hmm. This new poll, ABC News, Washington Post, Ipsos, has more than 60% of Americans disapproving of the way that the president is handling this situation. Professor, when you look at the breakouts here, are independent voters moving one way or the other on this issue, or are most of the respondents in that poll, you know, responding the way that you might expect, you know, predictable partisan lines?
I mean, obviously, for Republicans and Democrats, we're seeing, you know, largely they're sticking with, you know, their parties, although we've started to see some movement. So on the question of, you know, is the country on the wrong track? You have 75% of independents saying that it's on the wrong track. Now, that's a big number. But then you also see a plurality of Republicans, 45% saying the country is on the wrong track. And so those are people who are, say, I'm a Republican, and they're, and 45% though, you know, is say it's on the wrong track. Now, that's a real warning, you know, dangerous sign for any Republican, because if you're going to have your own party, your own voters saying, almost half of them saying that it's on the wrong track, you are in big danger.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know, too, if you did look into the breakouts in this poll, did they make any consideration between Republicans versus MAGA Republicans? We've seen a lot of polling outfits in the last year and a half decide to make a distinction between the two, and often those numbers are quite far apart, aren't they?
Well, right. And so one of the ways you can do that to try and look at, you know, MAGA versus regular Republicans is kind of, you know, it's what's known as Republican leaners. Those would tend to be the people that weren't MAGA Republicans. And so Trump has been doing really poorly among Republican leaners, too. So, you know, if you look at the GOP leaners, just 53%, you know, of the people would support Donald Trump right now and his approval rating. And he won 94% of those people in 2024. So he's down from 94%, you know, in 24, where he won their votes. He's down to just 53%. So those non-MAGA voters are really, you know, struggling.
Saw yesterday the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, come out and announce that Operation Epic Fury is over, as if to suggest that the sort of main combat operation of this conflict is over. Curious to know whether you think if the conflict did end today and there were no big headlines about this, no more disruptions to global energy markets, is the polling issue going to remain for the president? Is there any way he comes back on this issue as it sort of fades into the rearview mirror?
I mean, the only way it really come back from this is if you see the gas prices and inflation start to drop like instantly, right? We can't, you know, wait for gas prices to go down for the president. The president needs those things to go down quick, because we're heading into the summer travel months where everyone, you know, is driving around the country, going on vacation and taking their trips to see family. And so they're going to be, you know, using more gas. And it's traditionally at the time period where the gas prices go up, just, you know, because there's going to be more demand for it. So if we see that kind of situation, more demand and prices continue to stay this high, even with the cessation of any type of hostilities, if they stay this high, you stay in the mid-4s, it's going to affect, you know, everything going forward. So they need to see prices drop by, you know, 25 to 30% right now. And there's no time. There's no more time, because people aren't going to, you know, what happens is our opinions of the president and what's going on in the economy, they really solidify. And so if things were to change and get better in September, that's too late. You know, in October, people are already voting. It's too late. So things have to happen right now. You can't have people driving around the country all summer and paying $4.50 a gallon of gas.
If gas prices do stay high, Professor, is the public going to continue to connect that directly to Iran? Democrats going to be able to credibly continue to point back to this conflict as a reason for any increase in gas prices for the rest of the president's term?
Right. I mean, it's a great point. We, so the way, you know, voters and we work is that we simply are going to, you know, things are going bad. We blame the party, the president, and the party of the president. We take it out on the party of the president in midterm elections. And so whether that's right or wrong, that's what we do. And so that's why this gas question is so important. And actually, in that Ipsos poll, they actually had a question is, do you blame Trump for rising gas prices? And of course, Democrats, you know, 95%. But independents, it was 82% blame Trump for rising gas prices. And even a majority of GOP identifiers, 55%, you know, blame Donald Trump for raising gas prices. And so that, the blaring red flag that screams at you if you're a Republican trying to, you know, regain your seat in November, we're in big trouble. And this has to change now.
Just a moment left, Professor. There's a text here that asks, what is the popularity of the Democratic Party right now? I know that's not what was covered in the poll that we're talking about, but it is also the case that Democrats, it's not like they're winning the polling battle against the president, are they?
Right. No, I mean, if you pull Democrat, Republican Party, they're both underwater. Neither party is particularly popular. But in the end, because we're a two-party system, whether that's right or wrong, we are, people are going to vote one way or the other. And ultimately, you know, Democrats are going to have the advantage going into November.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Aaron Dusso is a professor of political science at Indiana University.
One of the things that knocked President Trump's approval among Catholics was a sudden skirmish with the Pope. And this week, Secretary of State Marco Rubio paid a visit to the Vatican, seemingly to smooth things over. Here's more from KCBS in San Francisco.
The two-hour-plus meeting comes amid escalating tensions between the Trump administration and the first American pope, Mark Sandolo. Mark, good morning. Why this meeting? Is there a little fence mending going on there?
No question there is, although Rubio, who filled in the Secretary of State as the press secretary just the other day at the White House, as Carolyn Leavitt, the press secretary, is off on maternity leave. He says this trip has been planned for a while, has nothing to do with dispatch between the president and the Pope. You know, that may or may not be true. But no question in this meeting that just concluded in the last little bit, certainly that must have come up. What we have here is popes have long been critical of wars, and they've long been critical of actions that American presidents have taken that have been contrary to, you know, Catholic beliefs. That doesn't mean that the president necessarily responds, but Donald Trump is a different president, and he's made very clear he doesn't like when the Pope criticizes him or his war. And as recently as just a couple days ago, he said the Pope is endangering millions of Catholics because he wants Iran to have a nuclear weapon, which, of course, the Pope has never said. The president also said last month, sent out a social media post saying that the Pope was, quote, weak on crime, which has people scratching their heads. The Pope has tried to rise above this, basically saying, look, I'm a spiritual leader. I'm not a political person. But the Vatican has always spoken out on these matters. President Trump is not one to step back to anyone, even spiritual leaders. And I think that's why you have this fight going on. Polls suggest there's a problem here for the president, is that he won the Catholic vote, not by a lot, but he won the Catholic vote back in 2024. Recent polls suggest that Catholics oppose him now and are upset with the way that he has criticized the Pope. I don't know if this is a huge political problem for the president, but it's a diplomatic problem when you've got the Pope telling the president and telling the world that what the United States is up to in Iran is wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, as you say, presidents typically show some deference to the Pope, but this is a different kind of president. But we also have a different kind of Pope. He's from the south side of Chicago, and maybe he, you know, doesn't take any gruff from anyone.
It is kind of fascinating to see this. I mean, you think about the meeting with Rubio today, and clearly they would have been speaking in English, which is something that, you know, popes haven't done before or for a long, long time, not since we've had a U.S. president. So it's it must be a fascinating dynamic. You know, the Pope, the president has claimed that the reason that the Pope essentially owes him for his job. And what the president has said, he said this over the last couple of weeks, was that it was because Donald Trump was elected, that when the cardinals met in the Sistine Chapel, they thought, what's the best way for our representative of, you know, the spirit on earth to deal with the United States? Well, clearly we ought to have an American who can then relate to Donald Trump, which is hard to imagine that that went through the heads of any of the cardinals. But whether it did or not, certainly, this has not been an effective way to deal with this president of the United States. The way to deal with this president is to not say anything against him. That doesn't work out all that well. So there's been a statement released by the State Department saying that the secretary spoke with the Pope about matters in the Middle East and other things around the world. The Vatican has not released a statement yet. It's unlikely the Vatican will release anything that is controversial. That's not their way with politics and diplomacy. But this is a very unusual dispute between the United States and the Vatican.
The news cycle moves so fast these days, but it was just over a week ago that President Trump faced another assassination attempt and said his secure ballroom was the answer to ongoing security threats. But is AI the real security danger? Here's more from KCBS.
Rich Frankel, former Special Agent in Charge of the FBI in New York is with us, talking AI and national security. Rich, two former White House advisors, one from the Trump administration, the other from the Biden administration, writing together in the New York Times that the rapid advancement of AI presents a critical national security threat and that the U.S. needs to act with greater urgency. How much of a wake-up call is this?
I think it's a good wake-up call. I think it's what's needed now. You're seeing AI technology being spoken about everywhere. There's actually another article in the Wall Street Journal talking about how states want some of this technology to help them protect against bad actors. So you use AI technology both as a sword and as a shield. What we need to do is put together a whole of government plan where we're using it, you know, to our advantage. But we're also getting a plan in place so that we are defended. The growth of AI in the last 4 or 5 years has been just dramatic. You know, it went from where we couldn't even it couldn't put a paragraph together that well, to where now it's identifying holes in viruses, being used in drone, being used in anti-drone technology. It's just used completely across the board in all types of both national security concerns and also everyday use.
It really seems like, you know, we have a lot of concerns over how it's going to maybe replace a lot of work here. They're all valid concerns, you know, the impact it'll have just on humankind. But it does seem, Rich, that the most pressing concern here is on cybersecurity. You know, the latest news of this AI from Anthropic that they were only sharing with a few select people, including the governments, you know, Google, Apple, some of these some banks and major companies were sharing with them because it would have such a big impact on cybersecurity. You know, AI that's able to hack almost anything. That seems like a major risk right now.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, I saw that letter from the states saying that, you know, it's only being used to protect certain companies and the feds, and it's not being used actually to protect, the state infrastructure. And that, I think, is where that issue that you're talking about, where AI could be used to identify holes in our infrastructure, which are most of the infrastructure is controlled by the states. And if they are able to identify those holes, then hackers can get in and change that code using both AI technology and straight hacking. And when they do that, then we lose the ability to control our own infrastructure, whether it's electric, dams, hospitals, etc. So this could be a major factor in how we move forward in our cybersecurity. We need to be able to use that technology as a shield while, you know, those going against us are trying to use it as a sword.
Can we really be a step ahead of AI? It almost seems like we can't anymore.
Yeah, being ahead of AI, I think everyone is moving ahead at the same pace. U.S. government and our allies seem to be ahead of China right now, but that could easily change. I think where we need to increase, or that we can get ahead of the issue, is if we take a whole government approach. We get everyone together. You get the scientists and technologists on one side. You bring intel agencies. You bring Department of Defense, Congress. The White House. They all get together, and with a sense of urgency, they start identifying those holes that need to be plugged, whether it's regulatory, whether it is in DOD, whether it is, seeing who is trying to smuggle our technology out, and also putting in place certain guidelines probably on how technology can be developed so that somebody cannot take it and do something that we're not ready for.
Yeah, and I feel like we're not ready for a lot. I mean, just how on top of this emerging technology are we really?
So probably in the government side, we're not really on that yet. Again, they didn't have that urgency. I think as far as, you know, our the companies and all that, even they're learning as they go. You know, the AI is increasing so quickly. Sometimes the companies that are even designing it are not ready for the changes in their own technology. And so I think, you know, moving forward, that's got to be part of what they do, is not only, you know, making AI better, but also determining how AI is being used and how it can actually be used against us. And I don't think they have really been looking into that. They've just been looking into how to make it better. And you know, as we move forward, listen, this could be used in a whole host of great things, you know, making medicines better, you know, making our technology better, et cetera. But, you know, if it could be used for good, some people can always use it for bad in that same in those same areas.
You know, quickly, Rich, being so polarized, do you see states and everyone else agreeing to, you know, come to the table, like you said, to come up with a plan?
Yeah, it is hard, but we have seen it in the past. Listen, we saw it during the Cold War. We've seen, you know, after 9/11. We've seen it since 9/11, where both sides have come together. The states have come together, working with the federal government. And usually, it takes some, you know, dramatic or drastic event to happen. I'm hoping that, you know, this call to arms, basically by these experts, you know, in the New York Times, is something that gets Congress starting to work together. Because if you can get Congress working together on anything, I think others then come to the table. But if they don't start working together, I think then we do have an ongoing issue.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.